In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a six-part podcast from CBC. Available now.
It has been nearly a year since a second Boeing 737 MAX airplane fell from the sky. That crash killed 157 people, and it revealed that the first crash, which killed 189 people a few months earlier, was more than an accident.
Their photos haunt a hearing room. The lost, their families reminding U.S. legislators that two Boeing crashes were not random accidents, they were preventable.
The country's transportation minister telling reporters preliminary data shows a, quote, clear similarity to the Lion Air MAX 8 crash off Indonesia in October.
In the days following that crash, the new 737 MAX planes were grounded, faster in some countries than in others, but eventually around the globe. And the search for answers began. At first, that investigation was expected to take a few months and the planes to be fixed and back in the air by September. Then, we learned more, and that target shifted to the holidays. Today, at the end of January, the planes are still grounded, and they may return, perhaps, this summer. If they do, will anyone trust them? Because in the meantime, we've learned some really disturbing facts about how new models of airplanes are tested and certified, or not, and how Canada relies on the United States to do much of that testing for them, and how even the United States often relies on the airplane manufacturers to regulate themselves. So we now have a much clearer picture of how exactly the system broke down so horribly, and we know perhaps how easily it might have been prevented. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. This is The Big Story. Grant Robertson is an investigative reporter at the Globe and Mail who has followed this story for the better part of a year now. Hi, Grant.
Hi.
Before we get into everything that's come since the disasters, why don't you kind of give us a picture of, to the airline industry, what was the Boeing 737 MAX when it debuted?
Well, that's a great question. It's a great place to start, because when the Boeing 737 MAX debuted, it was Boeing's next great hope for its lineup of aircraft. You have to take the story back to 2011, and that's when Boeing's main competitor, Airbus, in Europe, they're like the Honda versus Toyota in the airline industry. Airbus came up with a new plane, the A320, a new version of the A320 that was more fuel efficient, had more range, and the airlines really liked that. They could cut their fuel budgets. Fuel is one of the biggest expenditures for an airline. And so that really put Boeing on its heels. Boeing had to have an answer to that. So they got to work on a new 737. And they wanted it to match the fuel efficiency of the A320 or be better. And so they came up with the MAX, and they had to reconfigure certain parts of the MAX, certain parts of the 737 to create the MAX. And when it debuted in 2017, it was Boeing's best-selling plane ever, because airlines thought, great, we've got a new 737. We don't have to train our pilots on a different plane now.
Right.
We already fly 737s, so this is a newer, better version of it. This is exactly what we wanted.
So now explain how it all went wrong. So last March, the second 737 MAX in the span of a few months went down.
That's right.
What happens then?
So the second crash of the 737 MAX took place on March 10th. That really changed everything around the MAX, because it was the second crash in under 5 months for a brand new plane. And what it did was it made the MAX the deadliest plane, the deadliest commercial airliner designed in many different ways statistically. casualties in the first 48 months of a plane,
right.
It had the highest. Casualties compared to flight hours, it was one of the highest. I think only surpassed by the Concorde. But the Concorde was an unfair comparison because the Concorde hadn't flown that much.
Right.
And so it, every statistical measure, that second crash, put the MAX off the charts. And what it also did was it really hammered home the point that the first MAX crash, which took place in late 2018, October 2018, 5 months earlier, there was maybe a pattern there. When that first crash happened, it was originally blamed by Boeing on pilot error, and they had insinuated that these were foreign pilots that may not be up to the standards of pilots around the world. People didn't accept it, but that seemed to have been the storyline out of that first crash. Second crash happens, people start asking a lot tougher questions.
What answers did they get to those questions?
Some very disturbing ones. The MAX was based on a tweak to the original 737 design. Now, let's just take a quick walk through history on the 737. Designed in the 1960s, it is the workhorse of the airline industry. It's the, you know, it's the Honda Civic of the airline industry.
Right.
If you've flown on a plane, you'd be hard-pressed to maybe not have, you've flown on a 737 at some point in your life. It is everywhere. And the reason it is because it's a great continental plane for going across the, you know, across North America. It flies throughout Europe. And it was designed originally lower to the ground. So back in the 1960s, we didn't board planes through through the ramps that they have now.
Right, you had the steps.
Yeah, the steps. And the plane was lower to the ground, and the staircase unfolded from the plane. And so what they did was they designed the 737 a bit lower to the ground so you could load luggage on and off easier, faster. People could get on and off it more efficiently. The airlines liked this at the time. Throughout time, that became irrelevant because now we board through ramps. It's much more efficient. But the design of the plane never changed. They just kept updating it and tweaking it over the years as better technology came out. You still have the same body of the plane. So they come up with more fuel-efficient engines for it, bigger engines. But these have to be mounted differently on the wing. And they have to sort of move them up and forward on the wing to get ground clearance, things like that. And what that does, it changes the way the MAX flies. It, in some situations, would cause the plane to lift its nose, to pitch up.
Right. Can picture it.
Yeah. And so what they did as a solution for that is they put software in the plane that would, when that would happen, because when you pitch up, you risk something called aerodynamic stall. Basically what that is you lose the air around the wing, the force that lifts the wings up. You know, if we remember our physics classes from high school.
We don't.
Exactly. Yeah. You lose lift around the wing. So they designed this software to push the plane, the nose of the plane back down again. They thought that was the fix.
Right.
Originally, after the first crash, people started asking questions about that. Is this to blame? After the second crash, it became very clear that this was the issue.
That's when the 737 MAXs were taken out of service.
Correct.
How did that process happen in the weeks and months after? Because this is where I think people who followed the tragedy at the time and remember the planes being pulled start to lose the day-to-day coverage of it. But there was a lot going on over the months after that, after the second crash.
Yes. So after the first, I'll go back to the first crash. After the first crash, questions are being asked about this software that they've built into the plane called the MCAS. People might have heard the word the MCAS.
Mm-hmm.
It's the acronym for it. So they thought we can just write an easy software patch for this, and we can change the way we our instructions to pilots on how the plane flies, and everything will be okay. The second crash happens. What we find out is the MCAS is much more powerful than Boeing had let on, than the FAA knew, than Transport Canada knew.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a bigger problem than anybody expected. Countries around the world, in the first day and second day after the second crash, began to ground the plane, saying, we have enough of a concern and we have enough preliminary data that this plane is a problem. This isn't pilot error. This is something much, much worse.
Right.
So it begins with China as the first country to ground. massive airline industry there. And then it starts to cascade through Europe. Countries saying, safety first, let's ground. The outliers in that debate start to become Canada and the U.S. Now, what we know in the months since then is that Transport Canada's first reaction after that second crash was to wait to see what the Americans were going to do. They wanted to hear what Boeing's opinions were. They wanted to wait to see what the American authorities were going to do. Canada waited. They didn't act on the first set of data that everybody had. And they ended up grounding the plane almost 4 days later, a few hours before the Americans. But essentially at the end of it, Canada and the U.S. were the last two countries to make that move, which I think surprised a lot of people.
Some of the stuff that you've reported has kind of opened my eyes, at least, to the relationship between the FAA in the United States and Transport Canada. How does that process work for diagnosing, I guess, for lack of a better word, problems like this?
That's the key question in all of this, especially for us in Canada. There's an arrangement in the aviation world through governments that stretches back several decades in how they approve new planes and how they certify them. And what they do is the country where the plane is developed, so in the case of Boeing, that would be the United States, they would be in charge of certifying the plane. And then countries outside of that can verify that work. So essentially what that means is Transport Canada would check the FAA's math. And they can investigate things directly if they want. They can ask to see certain things. But essentially, they're going to verify the work the FAA presents to them on how they certified the plane. They verify the verification they look at their work. And the problem that creates essentially is you're really only looking at the material you're given by the FAA.
How did that manifest in this case?
Exactly. What if you weren't given enough information on the MCAS because it's new, because it's novel? So what we know is Canada was given a package of 71 alterations on the 737 MAX. So what that is 71 design changes from the previous version of the 737. So they go through those. It's things like changes to the landing gear, changes to the de-icing system, the console inside the cockpit. And they go through those and they do their diligence on those and they say, okay, it all looks okay.
Right.
Nowhere in there was anything about this new software system, the MCAS.
So it wasn't even included in the package?
Was not. Now, the reason for that, and this is where we go even deeper into the creation of this plane. The reason for that is in the mid-2000s, Boeing began lobbying Congress in the U.S. to say, look, plane certifications are getting far too work intensive. They're slowing down our production. It's making us less competitive with Airbus. We need to speed this up. Why don't you give increasing power for the certification of the plane to our engineers? We are the experts in this. We can help you work through the certification of the plane, speed things up. And the lobbying worked over a period of 5 to 10 years. What they did, there was always a situation where the FAA would work with Boeing's engineers on understanding new plane designs. But what one key thing this change did was allow Boeing to select the engineers that certified its plane designs. So it gave the FAA less control over who was essentially overseeing the paperwork signing off on these new designs. In a sense, it was self-regulation.
Yeah.
Now, okay, why does that really matter? Since that change was brought in, Boeing has designed two new planes. They've designed for commercial passenger service. They've designed the 787 Dreamliner, the big one that if you've flown to Asia, you might have been on one. The 787, when it came out, was grounded not long after it debuted because they had lithium iode batteries on certain parts of the plane that were catching fire during flight. So Japan Airlines, a big customer of Boeing for the Dreamliner, said this can't be. We need to deal with this, and so they grounded that plane pretty quick. The upshot of all that is the two planes Boeing has designed since they were given more power by the FAA to oversee their own and certify their own plane designs have both been grounded.
I guess what I want to know about Canada's role in it is what's come out in the months since, as the investigations have proceeded, to try to figure out how we go about verifying. Like, is it a rubber stamp process? Is it intensive? Does Canada ever traditionally break away from a previous certification?
From what we can tell, historically, not that much. So as we were talking about earlier, Canada essentially checks the FAA's work. And what we saw with this is they looked at the 71 changes. They all looked okay. The software wasn't in there. The software wasn't one of those 71 changes. And so Canada was basically acting blind when it accepted the package of changes from the FAA to double check. Now, under the agreement between the two countries, Canada can ask for anything it wants to look at on the plane. They could say, we'd like to look at, you know, the software. Mm-hmm. The key there is you have to know it exists. You have to know it's in there. And this is the even more important part. You have to know it's significant. So in the designing of a plane, there's this regulation that seems arcane but is actually very important. They call it Rule 21.101-1B.
Mm-hmm.
Right there, you just want to, you know, you don't want to hear anything more about it. You know, it just seems so arcane.
And is that the point?
That's a good question. It's known in conversation as the changed product rule. Now, what the changed product rule is it says you don't have to seek new certification on design changes that aren't significant. If they're minor, you don't have to recertify the plane. And it's there so that you don't have to basically redo all the paperwork on every new 737 that's designed. If you're just making a minor tweak to, let's say, the landing gear or the seats, you know, you don't have to restart all the paperwork. Okay. It doesn't trigger the change product rule. Boeing approached that rule from the other direction. They looked at the 737 MAX and said, if we keep our significant changes below the threshold of the change product rule, we won't have to have it recertified. And the key to that is if you recertify a plane, you have to recertify the pilots on it. You have to train them on simulators. You have to essentially take the pilots out of their day jobs, flying the plane, making revenue for the airline, train them on simulators, which is also very expensive. There's a lot of cost involved in retraining pilots. So they didn't want recertification of the 737 MAX to the point where they were offering airlines incentives. They said, if this plane requires pilot training, we'll give you $1 million off the cost of the plane. These planes cost about $100 million each. So they were giving $1 million back if you needed more training. And that was their promise, that we're not going to have a plane that triggers the change product rule. So what they did was they designed the software and they told the FAA, it's not that important. It's not that significant. It will only be used in obscure situations where the plane is pitching up a bit and needs to come down a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Don't worry about it. They said it's not significant because it doesn't effectively change the way the plane flies in other circumstances. There's no cascading effect through the plane.
Right.
That is the biggest mistake in the design of the MAX. It did have a cascading effect. So when Canada was looking at the plane, they never saw the software, as did Europe and the other countries that were the other aviation authorities that were looking at the plane. They weren't told about this software system because the FAA and Boeing had agreed that it was so minor that they didn't pass it on to the other countries.
What's happening now, almost a year later, in Canada, and I presume probably in some of the other countries that you mentioned, in response to this? I mean, there were a good number of Canadian victims of the second crash. What's Transport Canada doing? What do those victims want?
That's right. There were 18 victims in the second crash in Ethiopia. Transport Canada is now part of a multi-nation panel that is scrutinizing the MAX. There's about 10 countries, 10 aviation authorities that are involved in this. And this is somewhat unprecedented. It may be the most scrutinized plane ever. Because they
would hope so now.
I mean, Boeing has said when it comes back, if it comes back, it will be the safest plane ever. I'm not sure we can say that. We can say it's the most scrutinized plane ever.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've got this panel of 10 countries all sitting down, going through the plane now and the design of it very closely to figure out what changes need to be made. That panel is ongoing in the U.S. Here at home, there's been a situation where the families have said, we'd like a public process into this. We'd like a hearing. which is interesting. They've had several congressional hearings in the U.S.
Yes.
And through those congressional hearings, most of the information we know about the MAX has come out. They've been very effective in compelling people to talk and people to give information about the plane and where the design went wrong and where regulation went wrong, frankly. In Canada, there's been none of that. The families have had one meeting with Transport Canada. It's been behind closed doors, not public. They would like a public hearing into this so that we can look at how we regulate our airline industry and how Transport Canada oversees new planes for Canadians and if changes need to be made there. It's a pretty reasonable ask. One of the other things they're looking for is consumer protection so that if the MAX comes back, consumers, if they choose, who don't want to fly it, don't have to fly it. You can change your flight without costs. You're not inadvertently put on a MAX if you don't want to fly on it. Right now, as we all know, when we book flights, it's very hard. You may be transferred onto a plane. You know, there are changes all the time.
Right.
And so they want some sort of structure around that. Those are, given what they've been through, you might say they're pretty small asks.
Does it seem like there's movement towards granting that?
We don't know yet. It's coming up in a year anniversary of that second crash.
Mm-hmm.
And the families have tried to get a meeting with Transport Minister Mark Garneau since last summer and haven't been able to arrange one. He's only recently agreed to do it, and now they're trying to schedule that. So they've had very few meetings with Transport Canada. Those are going to happen. We don't know what will come of that, though.
You mentioned when or if these planes return to the air. Do we have any idea on what the timetable looks like for that? I keep hearing dates and then they change. Is that what's going on?
That's exactly what's going on. Initially, after that second crash and the grounding of the MAX, Boeing thought it would be a couple of months. They thought, we'll write a new software patch. We can fix the MCAS system. We'll be back in the air by summer. Because the airlines are very concerned about their losses that are mounting because of this.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they'll be trying to recoup that by suing Boeing, I'm sure. But it really has left a lot of airlines without the ability to expand because they have so many of their brand new planes grounded. We've seen successive deadlines over the past year set and then missed. You know, every quarter there's a new deadline saying the MAX will be back, you know, by the fall, by the Christmas travel season. Now they're talking potentially by this summer. Every one of those deadlines has been missed. It's going to come down to that international panel we talked about when they're ready to sign off. Will the MAX be allowed back in the air?
Just on those consumer protections you mentioned, what is the feeling amongst people in the industry that you talk to, or even amongst passengers in general? How can anyone feel good getting on this plane, and how can airlines feel like they can convince passengers to board them?
Yeah, how can people be sure? How can they trust that the plane is safe? In December, we saw Boeing, in preparation for the last deadline when they were expecting to bring it back, start, you know, they took out a full-page ad in the Globe and Mail, and they started advertising elsewhere with a message saying, we're going to make this plane safe. You can trust us. But that's a marketing exercise. It's going to come down to, can they find a fix for the software that can make this plane, which flies differently, make it fly without any issues? If they can't, they'll have to strip the software out of the plane, effectively reverting it to an old version of a 737. And I can't even imagine how that would look in the airline industry, because you've basically sold the airlines a new plane, and then you have to revert it back to the previous model. Either way, Boeing is looking at massive financial losses over this.
It's so funny because it's such a gut thing. You know, rationally, you would know that for any plane now to pass this 10-nation panel of certifiers, it would have to be safer than the average plane you might get on. Yet still, I don't know if I would. Would you?
I've had this question, you know, put to me a lot by, you know, a lot of people I know, and I don't know the answer to that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it seems to be a lot of people are saying, let's wait and see. Let's wait and see what the changes are. It's encouraging the plane hasn't been brought back before its time.
Yeah.
They've missed three or four deadlines, which is, to me, shows that, you know, they didn't rush anything back. Now, on the other hand, what configuration of the MAX will exist at the end of this process, we're not sure. Will it have the software on it? Will it not? There was an email that leaked in late November from a Transport Canada official who's working on this international panel. He sent the email to his colleagues on the panel, and then it leaked out from there. And the email was very telling. He said, how can we be sure? Should we not just strip the MCAS right off of the plane? And to see that conversation going on internally, what that tells me is, you know, it's the same conversation we're having, mm-hmm. that they're having with that plane. How long that takes and where they go with it, it's tough to tell.
Thanks, Grant.
Thank you.
Grant Robertson, investigative reporter with The Globe and Mail. That was The Big Story. If you would like more, head to thebigstorypodcast.ca. Find us on Twitter, @TheBigStoryFPN. Suggest the topic, complain about a topic, just tell us what you think. And of course, every podcast player imaginable, Apple, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, Podfodder. That one might exist. If it doesn't, it should. Thanks for listening. I'm Jordan Heath-Rawlings. We'll talk tomorrow.